Yes, indeed it is. Grunny is in the program.
Can you guys get it any colder in this studio? I'm a guy that I like it cold. I'm a sweater. I don't like to sweat.
Love
it. It is freezing in here.
Curtis is a big fan.
Is this because of you, Jake? Jake, did you do something to this thing?
Is that, what is he? So he's a thin letter O?
It's like a fish.
What is that?
It's like the and then your, fish logo.
You're tight, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you have
all
it.
Right. What's going on?
You know, Jake's lucky you're not a bully.
I've been accused of being a bully before.
I know you have. You're not, but...
I've been accused. I have been accused.
No.
And that's like the farthest thing, if anybody knows, I'm the farthest thing from me being a bully.
That is true. Tim Grunhard.
Kind of a wuss.
I told the story. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but... Saved me from certain doom one day. Certain doom. I don't think it was, but Tim Grunhard saved my life. I can honestly say that.
So, well, there I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Because you guys were talking about the greatest athletes and in
how
this
about you
and
with
age.
The segue?
Yeah, and you know what? I think we got the greatest radio going on in Kansas City right here
there
of all time.
Right
Thank
now.
Thank you, Tim.
I mean, you guys
appreciate
just
it.
Overtook Don Fortune.
Just now.
And who was the guy that used to come
Don's
on?
Friend,
and you remember the guy who said, give me a physical break? Who was
Al
that?
Al Eschbeck. That's who I stole Stump
get
the Chump from.
Get out of here. Give me a physical break.
Wall Street Journal report.
Yeah, you've taken over.
He's still firing down in Oklahoma. Do you know that?
Don is awesome. Love Don.
Don is
love
sailing.
Love you some Don.
Don is sailing.
I don't think Don has a sailboat anymore.
Really?
I heard a rumor. I think he still has the boat, but he lost his slip because, I mean, it's so expensive down in the marina that he was in. He's like, you know, I can't afford to keep my sailboat in this marina. Because he was doing stuff for the marina. He was, like, actually working for the marina for his slip, and then all of a sudden, I think his new ownership, and they're like, he's like, I can't afford this anymore. So I feel bad for Don because he loved to sail. He's a big sail. You remind me, was it Christopher Cross?
Sailing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It also might have just got to be more trouble than it was worth, too.
Plus, isn't he 100 years old now? So, I
mean, not quite.
I mean, eventually, you got to stop. You know.
Yeah, you're not that far away.
I'm halfway there.
More than.
I know, really. There's no way. I'm way more than halfway.
5/8 of the way
this,
to 80.
Through this travel on this little blue.
Yeah, halfway to 100, I guess that's right.
Yeah.
I was thinking halfway to Don.
No, halfway to Don.
Don B. 80, 85 now?
Close.
Remember he had a birthday that was either 60 or 65 when I worked with him. And I can't remember which one it was.
He's got to be well in his 70s.
That's 20 plus years now.
Yeah,
so.
Well in his 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Good man, though. Great guy.
Good guy.
Really,
I agree.
He really started all this stuff here in Kansas City, this sports talk stuff. He was one of the founders. There were people before him, but
he really
kind of made it
you
popular.
Weren't here, as far as you know,
as far as
when
I know.
You got to town in
well,
90.
Who was here in the 80s?
Ed Beeler. And actually,
Super
Pete
fan.
Enoch did a sports show here as well, I think before Ed Beeler. So it might be Pete.
I got a call.
It's Pete, Ed Beeler. They called him Superfan was his
I got a call on draft day from your guy. Where you working
Conrad
from?
Dobler.
Conrad Dobler.
I was an intern for Conrad Dobler when he was on KCMO, which was on the 8:10 a.m. frequency then before the 7:10, 8:10 flip.
And I got into town, and the very first week I was in town, he asked me to come down to Lynn Dickey's to do a live show.
Yeah.
So think about that. That's a long time ago.
That might have been later that summer that I was working for him.
You were probably there.
No, I wasn't.
A little surrender.
I would have remembered it.
Walking around.
I didn't get to go over to Lynn Dickey's. I had to stay in the studio across the street.
Were you old enough to even go into Lynn Dickey's at that point?
Well, it was a restaurant. Yeah, I ate at Lynn Dickey's. Was I old enough to go get booze? No.
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 I was barely old enough to get booze then.
Yeah. So you started to segue, and then I dragged us back.
Yeah.
The greatest athletes of all time. This is your theory.
Man, I'll tell
that
you what.
Right now,
we're
watching it in all
sports. I am
the
biggest Michael Jordan fan of all time. And I don't have any bolts anymore. I'm done. I can't fight it anymore. My kids, and you guys know, you were watching the game. I mean, they torture me. They badger me.
I don't know. Can it really be torture when
it
you're talking crap to them constantly?
Yeah.
And they give it back to you? Is that really, can you call that torture?
I mean, they're all
you're
the time.
You're goading
them constantly. They're jabbing me constantly. There's jabs. I'll throw some haymakers. One every once in a while, but they're jabbing every day. I mean, CJ woke up yesterday. He's like, see, you know, Harden, boy, he couldn't do nothing for his team. And, you know, I was like, oh, gosh. I mean, just please, just see, stop.
Listen, that's...
Having now seen
a game with you guys, I now know that that's absolutely not what happened. Your depiction of what it is.
Well, I may not remember because you came late, and I had a case of beautiful premiums for you, and I drank
Premier,
all of them.
Corona Premier. Drink all of them. I helped you with some. I was late, and I apologize.
No, that's fine.
But I'm sure CJ was scrolling through his phone, right, like most millennials, and minding his own business, and you started in on him.
Yeah, maybe I did.
Or was that just like it had built up? The constant, you know, abuse had built up, and you just decided it was going to unload.
That was the last chance I had to unload because now I have to admit that LeBron is unbelievable.
So, being a Chicago guy, though, I do think it's interesting because he was your guy in your town. So Chicago was on board with him being the greatest of all time before anybody else. That's how it always happens with your guys. Just like the gentleman, Bob, who called and said, I'm coming around, right? He's known it forever. It's been LeBron. Well, it's not LeBron. LeBron wasn't it the day he was drafted. He had to accomplish all these things. And somewhere in there, you get it. In your mind, when was it that time for Jordan?
I agree with you. When he came back, you know, after he left for baseball for, you know, because he wanted to play baseball.
But you're adamant he was suspended for gambling.
He was suspended. There's no doubt. But I and there's no proof. They'll never be able to prove it, but I think.
There's absolutely doubt.
Except for he left and then came back again. Right? That's what shot holes in that theory.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, you know, everybody's like, why is he going to go play for the Birmingham Barons?
Why was he going to go play for the Washington Wizards? Okay, that was what was foolish. Oh, because he owns part of the team. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's just dumb.
But, like, when he came back.
Go play for the Lakers.
And then they won three more. It's like, wow. I mean, you go and you strike out 134 times in a minor league season, and then you come back and win three.
Oh, by the way, at AA, batting .200.
Yeah.
Having not played the game in forever, that's a pretty good showing. Like, had he gone back and played baseball some more. I'm not sure what he, you know, well, he did. He was there two seasons, right? He quit in the second season. He's like, all right, it's not coming around. But that was still.
It was impressive that he could even get in there and get in the box.
At the age of 31.
Yeah.
Why didn't they start him down in A-ball or something? It was like there's this fast track. Like, you know, he bought the bus. He could take his bus wherever he wanted it.
He probably owned the team, too. We just didn't know about it. He probably owned the Birmingham team. But no, but so I agree. But now you look at like Mike Trout now in baseball. I mean, a lot of people, and I agree. I mean, boy, he's just tearing it up, and the numbers rear out that he may be one of the best, if not the best, baseball player of all time if he continues on this pace. And then you know, I still don't think that anybody's better than Gretzky, but Crosby and you know, those guys are kind of
listen. Ovechkin.
Ovechkin, yeah,
can catch him for the goals, Mark. I mean. I don't know that anybody will ever be the goals and assist guy. I think Mario Lemieux played at that level, but Gretzky played at it longer. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the two best I've ever seen. Sidney Crosby's up there. We'll see. Yeah. He's had a lot of concussion issues, and we'll see how long his career is if he can pile up the totals. But no, nobody's had the single season that Gretzky. What do you have? 200 points 1 year? I mean, several years.
Mm-hmm.
So no, they have not. But I don't know that it wasn't that he was just so far ahead of everybody else, and now the rest of the game caught up to that level of athleticism. I'd love to see Gretzky unleashed on the ice. I think he'd get his ass kicked by Ovechkin, though, at some point.
Who would?
I mean, if you get a chance to watch the Stanley Cup Finals, I mean, he looks like Ray Lewis out on the skates. The way when he puts a check on guys, I mean, they go down.
A big man. He is a big, strong man.
He explodes into guys and just wrecks them and just tears around
soft,
the
he's
ice.
He's got soft hands and a big hit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really unbelievable for a player his size. And then, of course, you got, you know, Tom Brady, who has got to be up there as the best baseball
player. So what's your theory?
What is it? Why?
So I got this theory. Like, number one, why your kids should always be better, right? If we listen to our parents – we don't make the mistakes they had to make to learn lessons. We have those lessons. We're equipped. Hopefully we take that. We don't make those mistakes. Then we make our own mistakes, and we give those lessons. Now we give all the lessons to our kids. They should constantly be getting better, right? I think that's how it is in science. You know, we know everything we know now, right? We know the Pythagorean theorem, and so now we build on that. We keep going and going and going. You build on things. Athletically, though, at some point we should reach our limit, right? Because we no longer are surviving on our athleticism as a species.
Well, remember when I was playing and just before I was playing, that was a steroid era in the NFL where guys were trying to get as big and as fast and as strong as these guys are now. I mean, that's why they were taking steroids, and a lot of guys were, and then they had to clean that up. And I'm not saying there's no enhancing substances in sports now, but it's regulated unbelievably better than it was back, you know, when I was playing. So I don't understand. I mean, it's just amazing to me. It's got to be the nutrition, the training, genetics.
Yeah, it's we're always every 10 years, guys are just a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger.
And I was telling Saran, I would have fit better in this era of football because I was better against the bigger, stronger guys. It was the fast guys and the quick guys that you don't see anymore. You don't see the Cragans and the Wrights and those.
How do you know that the big, strong guys aren't now as fast as the Cragans and Wrights?
I don't know. I don't. I mean, if they are, then, man.
I mean, the one thing I've watched, I mean, and I, you know, listen, it might have been hand time to maybe Lawrence Taylor clicked out a 4.58, but it was alleged he ran a 4.4 even. And so I've been waiting for the outside backer to come along and be a 4.37, right? We haven't seen that. So if his time was legit, the DTs and the LTs, to me, I don't know that they're athletically, that Khalil Mack is clicking off anything more than those guys did. Von Miller, you know, I think we're kind of there, but the big people are better, right? You had some guys that were just kind of fat asses, you know, and I think it started to transition during your time, right? You and Will and even Dave Zott
was a smaller guy, but very athletic, strong guy.
But you guys were athletic guys on the inside. You know, you were at least for the first 6, 7, 8 years of your career. Then as the knee happened, you were more of just a mauler. You were good at it.
That was a great holder.
but now, you know, you see these, like the Eric Fishers of the worlds are all over the place. They're all 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", 6". When Jonathan Ogden came in, you're like 6'9". Good God. Yeah. Previous to that, there was like, do you remember Russ the Bus McCullough at Mizzou, 6'10"?
Yeah.
Good dude. I don't know what he's doing now, but good dude. But he was really, like, I was like, he couldn't really play.
No,
not
so
at that
stuck.
Level. I mean, he was a good player. Don't get me wrong. He started at Missouri, but he wasn't an NFL guy. Now there's all kinds of guys up there at 6'8", 6'9". And for a while, it's like, oh, the NBA, the NFL's hurting because 6'5", 6'6", guys are all going to the NBA. See Larry Johnson and Clarence Weatherspoon, like, no, wrong. Yeah. That's not happening. What I do think is happening, though, is we've gone to the European model. We don't necessarily have academies. We do in soccer. But with AAU and 7-on-7 and spring football and the AAU basketball, and kids are forced to pick a sport early on. You know, I listened to a parent at my house on Friday night talking about how her daughter is tired of going to soccer practice. She's just finished second grade.
Yeah.
She goes twice a week to practice and plays a game and tournaments, and she plays in the Premier Soccer. And they're like, I don't know if it's worth it. And my wife and I were talking about it. I said, listen, that's not an issue for my kids, right? They have my genes, not my kids. And I was like, listen, if you want a scholarship, if you want to, I mean, that's what you got to do. You got to identify that sport that they excel at, and then they eventually end up having to go all in and focus on just that one sport. And it does make you better at that one sport.
And it does. And I've always been the guy that I'd want you to play. I played all the different sports, but I really can't say that anymore because my two daughters are both D1 athletes, swam. That's all they did is swim. And they started doing the two-a-day stuff.
Well, when did Colin play? Because he's a D1. He played at Notre Dame.
He played baseball.
Did he?
And he played
track.
He was in track. He shot put and discus and stuff like that. But then, no, he really towards the last couple of years, I think. I don't think he played baseball his senior year and his junior year. I think he just.
You know, it was like 2 years ago. Why are you struggling to remember this?
Oh, I don't know. You know why.
Because he's 50.
Yeah, just turned 50. But no, but – you know, he played all the different sports. But what I'm talking about, football, something you get guys who play basketball in high school football, but mostly if it's baseball and a lot of the country club sports like swimming and golf. I mean, that's what they do it all year on soccer. It's not really country club swimming, but soccer, obviously, you know, all year round. But baseball, I was just talking to a guy whose son, they've already played like 40 games already this year, and they haven't started the summer yet. They've had 40 games already since, you know, March. They've had 40 games.
And baseball, this is like a travel. He's on travel.
Yeah, he's on travel. They go and they play in all these different leagues. And they
might play three games in a day.
Yeah. They played 40 games already. So think about that. And then you wonder what, you know, Tommy John and all those kind of things that guys have because they're so worn out and they're using those muscles so young. But listen, I mean, it's just amazing to me to see the size of the guys, like you said, in the NFL. You know, I go in and we go do some things, and I'm looking at some of the guys that are on the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line. I mean, they're humongous. They're big, really big guys. And, I thought Dave Luce was a big guy. I thought, you know, Baldy was a bigger guy. John Alt, obviously a bigger guy. But, you know, these guys just seem huge. So I don't know what it is. But if you look at this day and age, maybe it's because we're living it now. And if we were, you know, 20 years ago doing this radio show, we'd say those are the best players. But you look at it now, I mean, these guys are bigger, faster, stronger. And we're witnessing some of the greatest athletes of all time playing their sport.
The most dominant players will have always been in every sport are the earlier eras. I mean, you won't have...
Because everybody gets better.
Yeah, because everyone gets better. And for instance, Babe Ruth. Yes,
he was Wayne Gretzky is looking like Wilt, right? He was the guy who was on the ice his entire... Not because of size, right? Because he's 5'10", 160. But because... His skill, his time, and the time he had put into the sport, he set the new mark. And once one guy goes, you know, I mean, how many kids right now are doing the dribble drills of Steph Curry? You know, where you see him do that, you're going to walk out, and that's going to be like everybody under 6'11 is going to be out there dribbling the ball with both hands at different tempos and switching it and going through. And because he's now showed you, this is what I do. So now every kid, you damn well.
Mm-hmm.
Better be out in the driveway pounding the rock.
And then you have the quarterback coaches like the Justin Hoovers of the world. Then you have the Jamie Blumas of the world who are working with pitchers.
Yeah.
There's kids now that are in eighth grade that are throwing in the low 90s. I mean, when we were in eighth grade, if you threw the ball over the plate at about 65 miles per hour, nobody could touch it. Nowadays, these guys are throwing 90 miles per hour in eighth grade.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And then, of course, we've had a couple kids, a kid from Aquinas, the kid from Shawnee Mission East, who are both pitching now in the minor leagues, and they were throwing up towards 95, 100 miles per hour when they were seniors in high school, juniors in high school. Just amazing. Amazing how good these kids have gotten. And you're right. I think a lot of it's because they've slotted, and now they do that sport, and they work on it. They work on it all year round. They're in the winter. They're in there throwing. They're in the batting cages or if they're, like you said, they're doing the dribble drills, and they're working all summer in AAU basketball. So, yeah, I guess that's just the way it is, and we're seeing the reaping of the rewards in sports nowadays with these kids that have been doing this stuff, and that's what they do, and they have great training. They got great nutrition. They got great coaches. They have the facilities. I mean, we didn't have those facilities they have now. We really didn't.
Well,
you go over to the park.
Yeah.
That's what we went to the park.
And that's how the guys in college get better, because now every big time, you know, the facilities that they have at Colorado State trump what Alabama had 20 years ago.
Right.
You know, and Colorado State's not what Alabama is today.
I don't know.
And so every guy can get under a bar and get to working out. Every guy can get in the cold tub and protect himself and recover faster to get back at it and work more.
And we benched and we squatted. We did inclines. We did curls for girls. We did some triceps. And that was it. Nowadays, these guys are doing all kinds of core work. They're doing, you know, a lot of military workouts.
That's a lot of it. The core training today, I think if there's anything where they've unlatched where we may see a plateau after this, is the core work. And I remember when Drew Brees, you know, he had like 5 miles an hour to his pass and I don't know how many yards in depth, because he went and he studied with a plyometrics guy. And he's like, well, you know, if you can rotate your body better. So he totally went to work on his core. And that's where he really took his game up with the New Orleans Saints, was he went to work on that. But that's true of everything. I mean, LeBron's in a hyperbolic chamber. I mean, he's doing that crap.
I know.
On top of, you know, Jared Sutton told us that the estimate is that LeBron James spends $1 million a year on his health, training, and nutrition.
Oh, there's no doubt.
I mean, that's what he spends on his own.
I would bet you that there's kids right now in Kansas City, all right, that are in eighth grade or freshman year, their parents are spending close to $100,000 on training and going to the little freeze thing where you stand in there and you get the freezing of your legs, whatever, cryotherapy, like you said, the hyperbaric chambers, yoga, you name it. They're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. That's amazing.
We'll take a break, come back. A couple things I want to get to. One, Brother Patrick asked us about what are some of the battles for KU and K-State in football, and it's quarterback. I want to talk about that later. But next, I want to get into some projections that were put out there for Patrick Mahomes and see how much Tim thinks this is accurate, because we backed out the numbers, and there's going to be real disappointment somewhere if these numbers are accurate. This is an unbiased guy. He doesn't have a stake in the Chiefs. So we'll just take his numbers. And
I haven't seen this, so I'm excited to hear about it.
Just how much does it rain on the parade? That's next here in the program.
All right, the Jazz, end of the hour answer. Warriors are just the second team to come from 11 down at the half to win at Game 7.
Oi. Oi.
Who was the other team to come from 11 down at the half?
Yeah, I thought I heard this, but I was wrong. Seven. I said the Bullets against the Spurs. turns out I was totally wrong.
It was the
Spurs were in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Ah. Yeah, they were. Things were kind of screwy, as you will see by this answer. It was the Warriors in 1975.
Okay.
43 years ago, they came from 11 down at the half to beat the Chicago Bulls, who were in the Western Conference.
Yes,
at that
they were
time.
For a long time. Now they were in the Western Conference.
In the Kings division.
And that travel made sense.
Yep.
It's why we've had expansion, because was a little tilted. To the east back in the day. Tim Grunhardt is with us here in the program. Great Cajun food from Jazz. A Louisiana Kitchen is what we are playing for. 39th and State Line, out at the Legends, and, of course, in Independence now as well, right by the Silverstein Ice Center's arena. And they got live music going tonight. You know how I know? Because the doors are open. Enjoy great live music. Of course, the best Cajun food in Kansas City at Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen. Granny, gentleman by the name of, as I find it, Gary Davenport put together projections for all the quarterbacks. He had Pat Mahomes at 63% completions for 3,875, let's call it 3,900 yards, 23 touchdowns and 14 INTs. Curtis took the numbers, put it into the passer rating. That'd bring him in at basically an 88.7 passer rating on the year. I think most people right now, if I said 3,900, 23, and 14 would probably take that, right? It would tie for the second most touchdowns that Alex Smith ever had in his career. 26 last year was his career high. And, you know, I was like, okay, 3,900 yards if he starts all 16 games. Last year, Alex Smith just topped 4,000 yards. And then Pat Mahomes tacked on for the team total, 284. So overall, they had just over 4,300 yards passing. He's got him going for 3,900. If, let's say, the periphery guys do what they did last year, and last year the periphery consisted of, this is who I'm talking about if people are wondering, Demetrius Harris, DeMarcus Robinson, Chris Conley, Sharkandrick West, Anthony Thomas, Orson Charles, Anthony Sherman, Ross Travis, Akeem Hunt, and Jehu Chesson. That's everybody who caught a pass that was less than 400 yards receiving. Demetrius Harris topped him at 224. They totaled 1,100 yards. Above them, Kareem Hunt, 455, 554 for Albert Wilson, 1040 for Travis Kelce, just under 1,200 for Tyreek Hill.
Okay.
Now you're going to bring in Sammy Watkins. You're going to take out Albert Wilson. So you've got the same kind of number of guys that are going to be the premium targets. Even if we back it to 1,000 of the periphery guys, and I'm sure people would like to think that DeMarcus Robinson is going to take a step or Chris Conley is going to take a step. You're going to inject Spencer Ware into that mix as well. Are we going to be disappointed? 3,900 yards. You give me, if I give that's 1,000, that's 2,900 yards for Kareem Hunt, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's certainly going to be a time.
Or is 3,900 way too low?
I mean, I would think between 38 and 4,000.
How many guys
would be
you think
where he's going to be? Oh, I don't think he's going to be much more than 4,000. I would be very, very surprised if he wasn't over 36, 37.
Okay. Over the last 5 years, how many quarterbacks do you think threw for 4,000 yards each of the last 5 years? On average.
I don't know.
On average.
I'm sure you have it right
I
there.
I do.
Let's see. 8.
It is, it averages just under 11. 8 last year, 13 in 2016, 12 in 15, 11 in 14, and 9 in 2013.
Yeah, but
so yardage-wise, if he gets to 4,000, he's kind of in the upper third.
He has the weapons to get there with,
he does
with
have
these
the weapons,
guys.
Agreed.
I mean, hey, listen, I think we all have to really kind of take a step back and take a deep breath with this kid. I think we're putting a lot on him. Remember, he is going to be basically a rookie quarterback in the NFL. You know, obviously there has been some rookie quarterbacks that have made a big splash, but he's going to make his mistakes. I think with this kid we're talking about during the break, I think you're going to see a lot of, oh, my gosh, what a plays. And I think you're going to say, what was he thinking? You're going to see times when he rolls out and he finds some space and he throws the ball across his body 40 yards to a receiver just trying to stay friendly, a little bit like John Elway used to do. Remember, he'd roll out and he'd find somebody on the back running some kind of flag or a corner route, and he'd hit that guy and be like, oh my gosh, what a play. But I also think there's going to be times when he's sitting in the middle of the pocket and he's reading and he throws the ball right to a linebacker that is kind of sitting in that curl zone, and you're going to be like, what was he thinking there? So there's going to be some of that stuff going on. I think the ceiling is very high for this young man. I think he's going to do a lot of great things, but I also think that he's going to make some mistakes. And we got to be ready for that. We're asking for a young quarterback to step in. That's what we wanted here in Kansas City for a long time, and they're going to be there. But with the weapons he has, and with some of the stuff they're trying to do out there, all indications are that they're going to do some stuff that he's comfortable with. What's he comfortable with? He's comfortable with more of a spread. He's comfortable with some empty stuff. So they're going to do stuff. I think that he sat down with Andy Reid, or Andy Reid sat down with him and said, okay, Patrick, what are you comfortable with? What can we put in? What packages? What kind of things can we do to make you feel comfortable right away so we can kind of get you in the flow of a game? And I think he probably said, Coach, I like it when it's 4 wide or 5 wide, when you got some mirror routes, when the same thing's going on one side then the other side, and then all of a sudden you look out there and with a 5 wide, they have to basically show you what the coverage is, because it's hard to disguise when you have 5 wide receivers. So he's going to know kind of what the coverage is. He's going to kind of know what the routes are. If you watch him when he was in college at Texas Tech, you know, he had those big wide receivers that basically didn't leave when they were 5 wide. The number one guys, the guys that are the widest, they basically sat down, and they had some things that he can get rid of the ball quickly if he had to. And then also you have guys challenging the middle field, and you got guys running whip routes and hitches and slants and all those kind of things, but they're mirrored on each side. I think he's going to feel comfortable with, say, okay, I have this look, I have this coverage, and I could make this throw. And I think that's what they're going to try and start him with.
I think, in you know, where you said we got to be ready for him to make some mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think we get it. He's probably not going to get away with 5 or 6 touchdowns the way Alex Smith did last year, having just 5 INTs. Mm-hmm. You know, which, by the way, I'm looking back and it is funny. Alex Smith had 5. The team had 8. Mahomes only had 1.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Kelsey had 1.
Hill and Kelsey each had INTs. I just brought a smile to my face remembering the, well, I mean, how do you have this guy throwing the ball? Yeah, those days will come too. But, yeah. No, he's probably not going to have 5 INTs. So we got to be ready for that. But this is where I do again come back to, if that 3,900-yard number's right, you know, Kelsey might back up to 800 yards. Tyreek Hill might only be 850. Or Sammy Watkins might be his 750 and 6 that he has been on average for his career. Right? If you think Sammy Watkins is going to play 16 games, you're probably kidding yourself.
Right.
So at the end of the day, yep, these numbers, right, you know, maybe they'll steal a couple hundred yards of the guys that are down there. They'll only get 1,000 yards. Or maybe, like, 4,000 yards isn't – Joe Namath was the first guy to throw for 4,000 yards in a single season. He did it in 14 games. That's not that hard anymore to do if the kid plays 16 games. Maybe that number is a little bit low, but I think we need to be ready for – you know, they may have paid $16 million for Sammy Watkins to come be 850 and 7. That's – I mean, granted, that's what it was. Instead of continuing to pay Albert Wilson, what did he get, about $8 million a year?
Something like that.
He got $8 million a year, and what he's been for the what he was for the Chiefs in his best year was 550 and 3. So you added a couple hundred yards and 4 or 5 touchdowns. What? If he can score more touchdowns, then you see why it is. But free agency, you always overpay for. But I am worried that
3 for 24, $8 million. For
you know, just like the Macklin deal. Macklin, everyone thought, okay, here comes. What was Macklin's best year? Oh, it was 1490 something and 10 touchdowns. Okay, that's what he's going to be every year here in Kansas City. He's not.
Yeah.
Sammy Watkins is not going to roll 3,000 yard seasons out there. I will bet money that that doesn't happen because he's only had one in his career. And maybe I'm giving him too much credit. I'm pretty sure it's only one.
He might have had one.
I'm not here to rain on the parade. The weapons are there. But somewhere in there, if there is a learning curve, you might have, you know,
well,
there's going to be nothing.
Somebody's going to be disappointed.
Right? He might go down the field more. So if Kelce has 800, but goes from 8 touchdowns to 10 or 11, that's not a bad thing, right?
Right.
If now he's sending the ball down the field more and making more big plays that are down there.
Well, remember, Kelce.
Maybe Kareem Hunt doesn't have 450 receiving. He only has 200 receiving, and your fantasy team hurts a little bit. It doesn't mean Kareem Hunt sucks, yeah. Right? There's going to have to be something come off the board.
There's only a certain amount of times that you can get the ball to certain people. And if you think about it, I mean, Kelce is he's a magnet. He's a defensive magnet. In the beginning of the year, especially the first part of the season, unless something strange happens, they're going to take Kelce out of the game. Their goal as a defense coordinator is going to say, listen, we are going to take Kelce out. And what do they do with that? They bracket him with the safety, and they have a linebacker kind of sits underneath, and they'll bracket him. So now you're going to have some more one-on-one with Watkins, with Tyreek Hill, and with Conley, and with Robinson. You'll have some more one-on-one stuff. So, you know, whether he can make all those throws and those guys can make plays, that'll be really the telltale of where this season goes. But, you know, what are they going to do with Hunt? I mean, the reason why they won a lot of football games, I know I'm going back to my old Marty Ball 1990s, but the reason why they won a lot of football games last year is because Hunt took over the game and ran the ball very, very effectively. I thought the offensive line blocked very, very well, and they did some good things, and he ran the ball well. Now, all of a sudden, you can't just take that out of the equation.
Well, I'll say this. If you just like rooting for Chiefs on your fantasy team, then go ahead and fire on Kareem Hunt. But I think his numbers have got to back up.
Yeah,
I mean you're gonna bring Spencer Ware back into the mix,
and
he is gonna sledgehammer some runs. I mean,
nobody runs the counter and power better than he does. I'll say that, and I've said it before. He does an unbelievable job of setting up those gap runs.
And you want that. You want them to have to defend that. I mean, I'm not saying Kareem Hunt is going to become a third down back. He's not. He's still going to be your number one guy. But they're going to sledgehammer away with Spencer Ware. And certainly finishing the game is going to be a lot of Spencer Ware. I mean, I can definitely see that. Where if this team's up 10, they're going to start pounding some people with Spencer Ware. So you're going to lose some rushing yardage, I think, out of Kareem, or at least some rushing attempts.
Well, right?
He might average 5.4 yards per carry next year because him and Spencer Ware are battering defenses.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They're playing nickel and dime because Patrick Mahomes can send it deep. And so maybe he will rush for more. But I think they'd like to knock off 22 attempts at least out of the 272. And that's not unheard of, right? No. The record's 420-something by Larry Johnson, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's not unethical treatment of a running back, but I think they'd still probably like to bring that number down a little bit, and Spencer Ware will get a lot of those carries.
I would not be surprised the first play of the
season.
I'll
say this, Patrick Mahomes isn't going to have the second most attempts on the team like Alex Smith did last year.
No.
Rushing attempts, I'm talking about.
But I do think that you know, the first game of the year, first play, you could see five wide and see Hunt in a slot position, and they're going to do a little bit more with that. We're running some bubbles to him, maybe running some, you know, some just little hook routes over the top where you get the ball. It's basically just another glorified way to run the ball, is to kind of throw the ball out to him on the flat and, you know, kind of a little curl route over the top if the linebackers are bailing because they got to cover the middle of the field, and that five wide look, and you got Kelce streaming up the middle, and you have like Tyreek Hill playing a slot streaming up the middle. They're going to have to drop. Those safeties can't cover both of them, so now the linebackers are going to have to go. The corners are going to be, you know, man on man outside with the bigger wide receivers, so it'll be interesting. You know, there's going to be an open space right in the middle of the field for guys like Hunt and maybe even Spencer Ware to catch the ball. So I think you're going to see more of a production from the running backs in the passing game than you saw last year. So that might be an option, another way to get him the ball.
Brother Patrick asked us about the battles, and the two biggest at KU and K-State are the quarterback spot. Talk to Tim Grunhard about that, if the adage is true. I'll give you one more Chiefs stat here in a minute. We'll talk about that, and then I also want to talk about recruiting that's going on right now in college football. I mentioned the 4,000-yard passers. I had the kids look up 26 touchdowns or more. That's what Alex Smith had last year, his career high, 26 touchdowns. How many guys do you think had 26 TDs last year? Same kind of deal, or the
five.
Average.
Five
the
guys.
Average
five
for the
guys.
Last 5 years.
Five guys.
There was nine guys,
Okay.
who had 26 or more last year. There were 12 and 16. 13 guys had 26 touchdowns or more in 15. 13 in 2014 and 10 in 2013. So on average.
So last year was the least amount?
Last year was the least amount in the last
5 years.
Why
is that? I wonder.
I don't know. And last year was the least amount for 4,000-yard passers in the last 5 years. Maybe if I go back 10, we'll find out that there was some, I don't know, brutal. I mean, I think a lot of dime coverages. I think a lot of sub package. I think more and more teams are playing more secondary guys, and so they're
taking
away
some stuff.
What if
that means, if you look it up, the running averages in the NFL were up last year compared to...
Could be. I think teams are going to the running back by committee and getting good running backs.
Yeah.
And they're piling up a lot of yards there, too. Yeah, I think that's possible. Chiefs last year rushed for 1,900 yards. I mean, that's a pretty good number.
That's a good number.
That's a pretty good number. Like 2,000 to me would always be your goal, mm-hmm. but it's a lofty goal. It's not just like you're not setting 2,000 as a number like we want to make easy. You know, we want to get to 2,000 because we want to be icing games with a running attack. We'll talk about the college ranks here in the next segment with Tim Grunhard. He's here in the program. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Soren Petro. Tim Grunhard is in, as he is wanting to do. We come to you straight out of the Rally House studios. Tim, quarterback battles with both KU and K-State. Does that mean you have no quarterback?
Well, K-State's always going to have a quarterback,
right?
Value. That's just the way they do it.
It doesn't at K-State.
Yeah, it doesn't at K-State. And in K-State, they'll find somebody, and Coach Snyder will do a wonderful job of getting
him prepared.
But
is it just his coaching? Like, when you watch him, do you go—
I think so.
Do you go—
I do.
Yeah, because he's got no one— You know, Chad May was the best guy to the pros, and particularly since he's gone all out into the running quarterback, you know, he's not looking for guys to be pro passers, right?
Yeah,
and so is it just he coaches guys that are glorified college running backs into being – he gets guys so wide open that literally anybody who can throw a football could make the passes?
Well, or I don't want to take too much off of those guys. But, yeah, his offense is just it's really kind of different. You know, everybody talks about – You know, one of the things that, and I've talked about a couple of Notre Dame coaches and everybody else, and they know that I have connections with Kansas, and they said, why doesn't Kansas go to something like what the Army does or Navy does, and something a little bit different in the Big 12, because everybody's kind of running the same offense in the Big 12, so they're used to seeing it. Why not have a different wrinkle, a Georgia Tech offense, one of those kind of things? And really, K-State is the closest thing to doing something different in the Big 12, and that's why they have a lot of success, I think. I don't think that they have that much of better players than KU or really anybody else, but, Coach Snyder does an unbelievable job of putting together an offense that's just hard to prepare for because you don't see it. You know, you have a tight end in the backfield. Sometimes you'll have a tight end.
How are they so disciplined? Because their patience
because
in the backfield.
Because their coach is disciplined.
They've got their quarterback always runs like he's Le'Veon Bell.
I told you.
And really start with Colin Klein. He allows the blocks to happen. He allows it to set up, and then he goes. And Delton does that too.
And the kid from Osage, Fort Osage, who's battling for a spot.
Yeah,
right?
Skylar Thompson.
Yeah, Skylar. Yeah. So you know they are.
He doesn't run like Delton. Delton runs like Michael Bishop.
Incredibly, incredibly disciplined. That they wait and they set blocks up. But, you know, the one thing that I think I've told this story before.
And by the way, I'm not saying Skylar Thompson can't run, K-State fans. That's not it.
Yeah.
He is a good runner. But, I mean, he does not run with anger. Delton runs like he's going to
Bill Snyder walks around with a recorder, okay, at practice every day. And he'll go from station to station. He'll go from position to position, and he'll talk in his recorder. And he won't say anything during the practice, but he'll talk in his recorder, and he's making notes. You know, the offensive line coach was not concentrated on their feet. The offensive line coach has got to do a better job of getting those guys to get their head across their hands inside. Whatever it is. And he'll go to everyone, and as soon as practice is over, he'll go and he gives it to his secretary, and it's about 5 or 6 pages of notes. And the first thing that those coaches do when they're done with practice, everybody's gone, they get their notes, and he sits there and he goes through every one of the points that they need to get better at in practice with their players. And then the coaches now take those notes and they look at their film, they look at what they're
doing.
So
he coaches his coaches better than everybody else?
Yes. He has his way of doing things, and he's gonna do it. And he does an unbelievable job. And I've talked to some of the coaches. In fact, there's a young man who, Stanton Weber, who is
was one of your players.
One of my players.
He's
now a coach.
Stanton had one more year. No, is he done?
Landry. No, it was Stanton. No, he's done.
Stanton
Weber. Yeah,
Landry's
there.
Okay.
The Weber boys. But he's now a coach there. And and the time we talked to him, he says, it's unbelievable how disciplined and how focused and the little things that Coach Snyder goes through every day. He does not take a day off. He does not take a period off. He does not take a play off. And that's the way that he's been so good at what he's doing. And on the flip side with Kansas, you know, they just got to find an identity. It's as simple as that. They have to find an identity and go with that identity, and that quarterback's got to fit that identity. I think Beatty does a really nice job of getting the best out of some of his guys. But, you know, the reality situation is that they're not succeeding. It's as simple as that.
So how do you solve the quarterback riddle? Like, Bill Snyder, I do think, makes everything around his quarterbacks better than maybe anybody else, whether that's the coaching that goes on of his coaches and the team and the scheme and everything that's there. But how do you go about finding the guy? Right? Because the style of football that they're playing at Kansas, they've got to have the guy.
Yeah.
Why?
The guy nowadays in this recruiting process, they do not want to be in a project. They want to go in and they want to play. They want hard to find a guy that's going to buy in, that say that he's going to get knocked around a little bit and have some,
so
not have success.
The reason why I have some optimism, and I know we're almost out of time, but for the JC kid at Kansas is because he's like 5'10 or 11. Somebody's like, they're like, oh, I hear he's only 5'10. I'm like, that's a good
thing.
That
is a good thing.
Because that means everybody else passed. He might really be good. And there have been Stephen LaFours at Louisville won a lot of games. There was a Verducci or Verdusco or something at Illinois who's like 5'10". The most famous is Doug Flutie.
Best quarterback really in the last 20 years at KU?
Well, yeah, Todd Reesing.
Todd Reesing, how big was he?
5'10" is what I would guess him to be, 5'11" at best.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, I think that's a positive because it means they finally might have gone and got a thrower of the ball who didn't fit the height-weight chart. So we'll talk more about it, Tim Grunhard, every Tuesday here in the program.